That's exactly what I'm going to talk about right now with Dr. Emily Colton. She's an accredited practicing dietitian, accredited sports dietitian and nutritionist and private practice specialising in a variety of health conditions and the management of arthritis. And on behalf of the Arthritis and Osteoporosis WA group, she joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Emily.
Good afternoon, Jenny.
Thank you. Gosh, you're well qualified, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got to say nutrition is definitely one of my passions in life.
Well, that is fantastic. It's good to know that you care about everybody, and it's a very obvious indeed. Now, the Arthritis and Osteoporosis WA group work very hard at trying to help people along with their condition, their pain management and so on. We've talked about this for quite some time, actually, but this is quite concerning. They've suggested that osteoporosis is more likely to become more common in Australia.
That's right, Jenny. It is likely to become more and more common in Australia, and it's really for three reasons. So, firstly, Australia has an ageing population, and older adults lose bone at fast rates compared to younger adults. Mm. And unfortunately, as much as people would like to, they can't change their age, but they can change these next two reasons for why osteoporosis is likely to become more common in Australia.
Okay.
And these reasons are due to their lifestyle. So due to their diet and what foods they're eating and what foods they're not eating, and also due to a lack of exercise, particularly weight-bearing and resistance exercise. And in fact, osteoporosis, it's largely a preventable disease, and it's not just older adults that should be concerned about their bone health.
Yes, that's a very important point. I've heard this mentioned so many times, resistance exercise, and you're talking about sort of putting weights on your ankles, that sort of thing, not too heavy, but just to make sure that you add that strength there.
Yeah, so, I mean, resistance exercise, this is really a variety of different types of exercise. So it could be ankle weights, like you say, lifting weights, but it could also be resistance bands. And the great thing about resistance bands is they're fairly affordable because, you know, buying weights can be quite expensive and they also don't take up much space and you can travel with them as well. So resistance bands are great. It can also be using someone's own body weight. So there's actually no need to go out and purchase equipment. So this could be things like doing push-ups, pull-ups, lunges, squats, and even household tasks. So things that involve lifting or carrying or getting out in the garden and doing some digging, they're all resistance exercises. And also impact exercise. So that's really great for bone health. So that's things like dancing or jumping and using a skipping rope or hill walking or walking fast, climbing the stairs, and also jogging, tennis. So lots of different activities.
Yeah, you covered a lot there. They all sound like a bit of fun, as a matter of fact, too. And, you just have to start. I think the hard thing about exercise is the starting. Once you do, you feel so good with it that you want to keep
absolutely.
Going.
Absolutely. And, of course, we live in a society and in a world where we're all time poor. So I often say to people, do what you can do. You know, even if it's 5 minutes, at the end of the day, if you've done 5 minutes of exercise, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's better than nothing at all.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Not to be specific necessarily, but when should we start to be doing this and more mindful about our bone health to prevent later in life having weaker bones?
Yeah, actually, we should be concerned at all ages and all stages at life. So action can actually be taken at every single step of the life course. So all throughout childhood, throughout adolescence, and throughout younger adulthood and into older adulthood.
Okay.
So throughout childhood and then into early adulthood, really the goal is to be maximising savings in this, you know, so-called bone bank that we have so that our bone is able to get as strong as possible. The stronger our bone, then the less likelihood we'll develop osteoporosis later on in life. So childhood and adolescence, they're really critical periods in the development of the skeleton.
Yeah.
And what's happening throughout the first, say, 10 to 12 years of life is how much bone someone has and the strength of that bone, that's going to increase and it's going to keep on increasing. And to reflect this, the calcium requirements from the diet throughout childhood, it actually increases from the age of 2 up until 12 years of age. And then by the time people reach their teenage years, they've already got half of their bone, but they've still got the remaining half to go. So what our teenagers are eating is really important. And so calcium requirements are continuing to increase until we reach our maximum bone strength, which happens in our early adulthood, around our mid-20s. It's slightly different for different people. Yeah. And research is actually showing that a high alcohol intake, especially during adolescence and young adult years, dramatically affects bone health. So we know that alcohol intake affects brain development, and for that reason, alcohol is not recommended during childhood adolescence. And it also affects the development of the bone as well. So
very important.
Then what happens as we get into the remainder of our adult life, people start to make withdrawals against their peak bone balance, so against their bone bank. Yeah. So the goal during adulthood is to achieve unnecessary bone loss in order for people to maintain that healthy skeleton. So what's happening then as people move into older adulthood is that the nutrients which are important for bone health, so for example calcium, we're not able to get calcium as much from food as we are able to when we're younger, and also we lose more from our body. So our kidneys, their function deteriorates, and so we lose more calcium, and so that's why diet is particularly important in older adulthood. So what's happening, particularly for women, is after menopause, they're also going to be losing our bone at a rapid rate. So it's really important that we're paying attention to what we can do for our bone health at all stages and all ages of life.
Is it a situation where prevention is obviously the only way to go to make sure that you are getting that adequate calcium in your life. But what about when you haven't done that? Is there any way in your older age group that you could repair the bone with starting to exercise and change your diet?
Absolutely. And I see this in private practice with clients that I work with. So they come in, they might have had a bone density scan. So that's how osteoporosis is diagnosed, or osteopenia, which is where someone has lower than normal bone mineral density, but not yet to the extent of osteoporosis. And so they've come in because they want to find out, well, what can they do to improve their bone density? And so by making changes to their diet and by doing more physical activity and the right types of physical activity, they are able to improve their bone density.
Okay, what type of foods are you suggesting in the latter stages of life? You've mentioned for the young people. What about the latter stages?
Yeah, so when we have a look at, you know, what people are eating in Australia, we had a survey. It's called the Australian Health Survey. And what that showed, if we talk about, if we start off talking about males, so males who are in the 19 to 50 age bracket, only about 1 in 2 males were meeting their calcium requirements. And then as they moved up into the 51 to 70-year-old age bracket, then only 1 in 4 males were meeting their calcium requirements. And then as we move up again to the older than 70 age group, only 1 in 10 were meeting their calcium requirements. Now, unfortunately, this is actually even worse for women. So for women in the 19 to 50 age bracket, about 1 in 3 meet their calcium requirements. And then for females 51 to 70, this decreases to only 1 in 10 females.
Goodness.
And then as we move into that older than 70 age group, get ready for this, Jenny. Yeah. This is shocking. 1 in 20 are meeting their calcium requirements. And, of course, one of the challenges for people is knowing, well, what are good calcium sources? And then how much do they actually need? And this is going to vary based on, you know, someone's age, based on their gender, and also based on health conditions that they have. as well. So this is where working with a dietitian can be really useful, because a dietitian can then give the individual personalised advice around how much and what types of foods. But I like to say, you know, a rough rule of thumb is high sources of calcium are your dairy foods, so yogurt, milk, cheese. But there's also some non-dairy sources which are great sources of calcium as well. So this includes firm tofu and canned fish.
Yeah.
So the amount of these foods that would provide about a third of most people's daily requirements is, say, a small can of fish, so about 90 grams of fish. So this could be sardines or salmon or anchovies, and then two small tubs of yogurt. So that's the amount.
It's not too much, is
that
it?
Most people would have to have.
Okay, so what if people are, and a lot sort of put their hand up to this, are lactose intolerance? How do they get enough calcium?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of sort of misinformation around lactose intolerance. So firstly, lactose, it's found in some dairy foods. It's a natural food component. And what's happening in lactose intolerance is that a individual's body, because of their genes that they have, they don't have enough enzymes to break down the lactose which is present in some dairy-containing foods. And while it's not dangerous in any way for individuals with lactose intolerance to have these lactose-containing dairy foods, they often will choose not to because they'll experience some digestive symptoms which can cause discomfort, so things like bloating and diarrhea. But it's all important just to point out that there's quite a few different health conditions that can cause these symptoms. So it's worthwhile working with a dietitian and a GP that you have a good relationship with in order to determine what is the cause of these symptoms due to lactose intolerance, or is it due to something that is more sinister, in order for people to get the best management for their health. But for those who do know that, yes, they have lactose intolerance, what they can do is they can actually have the dairy foods, which are providing a good source of calcium, which don't contain lactose. So, for example, hard cheeses, so that's like cheddar cheese, that has negligible lactose in it. And also the bacteria in yogurt, and these are called probiotics, well, they make their own enzymes to be able to break down the lactose. So what happens is then the lactose is already broken down before people go and have some yogurt. And most people still make some of the enzymes. So a small quantity of the lactose-containing dairy, so examples are milk, can usually be well tolerated. So I often say to people who have been avoiding dairy because they're lactose intolerant that they might like to experiment with the amount of milk that they could have without getting symptoms. So most people can have, for example, half a cup of milk, so small quantities, and to try those dairy foods which don't have lactose, like the hard cheese and yogurt.
Well, it's very important, obviously. And just finally, Emily, what about supplements? And also, just very quickly too, can we have too much calcium in our diet?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Jenny. So in regards to supplements, so there's different types of calcium. So there's different types of calcium supplements. So there's calcium carbonate, calcium citrate, calcium gluconate, calcium lactate, and there's a few others as well. But calcium carbonate and calcium citrate, they're the most common forms which are found in tablets. And in terms of, well, what's the best type to take? Well, this is going to depend on what our listeners' specific circumstances are. So, for example, their age, if they have certain medical conditions, if they take certain medications, whether they take the supplement with or without food. This all influences the type of calcium supplements that they should take. So, for example, calcium carbonate, that's a very common form. This should be taken with food. I see many people in private practice who are taking calcium supplements, but they're not taking them correctly, so they're not taking them with food.
You get advice,
So, yeah, so that's...
And just finally, too much calcium, can we have that in our diet? Far too much.
We can get too much, yes, and particularly when this is coming from supplements. So more is not better, and calcium supplements should only be taken if they are prescribed to you by your GP or specialist, because they will prescribe an appropriate dose. And a dietitian can help as well, so they can assess your diet for how much calcium you're having to determine whether your diet requires supplements, because a calcium supplement may not be necessary. It is, however, best to get calcium from food sources, because food is going to provide people with other nutrients that are beneficial to their bone health that a supplement just won't provide. Yeah. And we know that nutrients in supplement form versus in food form don't act in the same way in the body. So, for example, calcium supplements, they can cause side effects like constipation and diarrhea and abdominal pain, which doesn't happen with food sources of calcium.
Okay, good point. Very interesting. So much information. And Dr. Emily Carlton, we thank you very much indeed. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jenny.
Thank you indeed. Now, if you'd like to find out more about arthritis and osteoporosis, a WA's exercise service, Arthritis Keys program, or their support groups, you can call Arthritis and Osteoporosis WA on this number. It is 1-800-011-041, or you can visit their website, arthritiswa.org.au. Curtain Radio.